This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Jeff Cooper, President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by AgriPulse. Celebrate America's 250th year with AgriPulse and save $250 on your first subscription. Don't miss the news that matters most. Subscribe to AgriPulse today. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with RFA's Jeff Cooper next. For 250 years, America has been shaped by the people who feed, fuel, and lead our nation. Celebrate America's 250th year with AgriPulse and save $250 on your first subscription. Use code 250USA at checkout by visiting agripulse.com/subscription. Don't miss the news that matters most. Subscribe to AgriPulse today. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Time is running short on the legislative calendar for 2026. Legislation to allow year-round sales of E15 now languishes in the U.S. Senate after being approved in the House. Jeff Cooper, President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, says they continue to make their case to members of Congress to finish a long overdue piece of legislation.
There does seem to be a lot of wheel spinning happening in D.C. right now, especially on the Senate side when we talk about advancing year-round E15. Of course, we got that bill out of the House, had a lot of momentum coming out of that House vote. Then the bill moved over to the Senate, and things have really slowed down. You know, the wheels are turning, but they're not turning near fast enough. And we are really looking for action. We're looking for that catalyst to really supercharge this effort and get that legislation out of the Senate. And, you know, we met with 49 Senate offices in 2 days. So, you know, half of the Senate, and our goal really was to get to those senators from both sides of the aisle who maybe haven't been paying close attention to this issue. So, you know, Maine and New Hampshire to New York and Florida and Georgia, Oregon, Washington, New Mexico, everywhere in between. And what we heard from a lot of those offices initially was, well, we don't really have a dog in this fight. So we're, you know, kind of neutral on this issue. We haven't really taken a position. We don't have a lot of corn. We don't have any ethanol plants. And our response to that, of course, is, yeah, but you do have drivers. And you have a lot of them. You have working families who are looking for lower prices at the pump, and E15 could save them 20 or 30 or 40 cents a gallon. And it's always really powerful when you're able to show them some pictures of pumps, you know, dispensers or price signs from stations that are selling E15 today. That really gets their attention. And so when we look at, you know, this affordability issue being top of mind in every office on Capitol Hill, that's a pretty powerful message, and we're hopeful that that is going to help generate some buzz and some pressure to get leadership to get going on this thing.
Jeff, yep. I would ask your thoughts now in the Senate on the loss of the distinguished Senator Graham and also still the absence of McConnell. With regard to the path of E15 in the Senate, how do these two news events transpire in terms of the progress on that legislation?
Yeah, well, it does create even more challenges for us, Jeff, and more a delay, I think, as the Senate is sort of figuring out, you know, where they go from here in terms of what the Republican caucus looks like. I mean, obviously, Senator Graham, a very powerful force in the Senate and a leader in the Republican caucus, and a guy that a lot of his colleagues look to for cues and leadership on these sorts of issues. Senator Graham was a supporter of ethanol, supporter of E15. Of course, Senator McConnell's also been a very good ally and friend on these issues. So having those two, you know, missing from their roles, their active roles in the Senate right now is creating even more challenges. And that means we're going to have to lean even harder on Leader Thune and others at the top of the Republican caucus in the Senate to figure out a way and a path forward to getting this done. Obviously, they have a lot of work to do, a lot of other things to get done, not a lot of time left on the calendar, especially when you think about midterm elections coming up. So it's going to be a challenge to thread the needle, but we do see some opportunities to get this done.
Well, Senator Grassley hasn't slowed down in support of E15 legislation at all, and suggested in this past week that this could be attached to another piece of legislation. It could move through another committee that might give it a little more traction. Is that being discussed?
It is. I mean, Jeff, we are working with our friends like Senator Grassley and Senator Deb Fisher from Nebraska and Senator Ernst and then, of course, on the Democratic side, Senators Klobuchar and Duckworth and others to find every opportunity. And they are being creative and they're looking for options and ways forward. And so, yeah, we're talking about everything from a potential supplemental funding package to the defense spending bill to appropriations later in the year. There's just, we're leaving no stone unturned and we are encouraging our friends to get creative, look for any and, every potential vehicle to move this legislation. I do think it's unlikely that it would go as a standalone bill. It's going to be incredibly difficult to find the time to schedule a vote on a very narrow piece of legislation. And it's also, as we found again or confirmed again this week, it's going to be a challenge to get the education done that would be necessary to get to 60 votes on a standalone piece of E15 legislation. So we are looking for any moving vehicle to attach this legislation to and get it done.
You have a new poll of consumers that came handily in time before your fly-in, and it seemed to suggest that rural, urban, D, or R all seem to favor more renewable fuel and saving money at the pump.
They really do, Jeff, and that those results were very well timed and not surprising to us, but maybe a bit surprising to some of the Senate offices that we visited. What that poll showed is, and we surveyed 2,000 registered voters from across the country, the entire political spectrum, and it found that 3/4 of registered voters, 74%, support increasing the availability of E15, and 71% specifically support legislation that would allow the year-round sale of E15. And there really was no partisan divide when you look at the kind of finer demographics on that polling. It showed that there is strong support, 70% plus, in both parties for getting this done. You mentioned the conflict in Iran. Obviously oil prices jumped back above $80 a barrel this week with the new activity or recent activity in the Strait of Hormuz, or lack of activity maybe. And those are very powerful and compelling statistics to share with these offices. And again, it makes sense, right? I mean, voters want lower cost options at the pump right now. They're facing very high, near record high prices at the gas pump, and they're looking for any options to help provide some relief.
One of the other items that's being considered in Washington is additional financial support for farmers who are suffering from low commodity prices, high input costs, and global economics. Jeff, is there evidence that would suggest that approving a voluntary E15 piece of legislation would help rural America in terms of jobs and in terms of farm income?
Absolutely there is, Jeff. We completed an economic analysis, RFA, and the National Corn Growers Association earlier this year, showing that opening this market, and again, this isn't a mandate. That's something we have to explain to some of these offices. Nobody is forcing anyone to buy or sell E15. This simply opens the marketplace to that fuel on a 365-day-a-year basis. And that would absolutely boost demand for corn growers, over the long term and provide new opportunities and new markets and create new jobs and new economic activity and certainly boost corn prices. And those things are all, top of mind, I think, especially for those ag state legislators today. but also for folks outside of the Corn Belt. They want to help our farmers as well. And I think many of them are growing weary of needing to approve, you know, requests for more emergency aid and funding from USDA. And they'd like to find ways of supporting farmers, that doesn't require USDA getting the checkbook out, and certainly building new markets and boosting demand and creating new value is the best way to do that. And E15 and other new biofuel markets, is certainly the best option available. So we did have, I think, some breakthroughs when it comes to that message as well.
Can you guess how much more corn would be needed if this voluntary E15 bill would pass?
Yeah, the demand boost could be tremendous. We're talking about 2 billion bushels or more of new corn demand if E15 is adopted nationwide. Now that's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take some time to phase in, but we know from talking with all of our friends in the retail sector and fuel marketers that is keeping that expansion from happening today is their inability to sell that fuel and offer it to their consumers every day of the year. So removing that barrier and giving the marketplace the choice to choose E15 would, you know, we think would cause expansion to happen very quickly. And again, once you get it totally phased in, we're talking about an additional 2 billion or more bushels of corn demand annually and another 5 to 6 billion gallons of domestic ethanol demand.
Ethanol blended fuel is not just a U.S. item. Brazil also produces a lot of ethanol, and both Yep. countries sell a lot into the globe. The question is, how is Brazilian trade practices impacting the U.S.?
Yeah, and it's unfortunate, Jeff, but the last several years, Brazil has erected trade barriers that have prevented U.S. producers from selling into the Brazilian market. You're right. They're the number two producer and user of ethanol in the world. They're at, you know, 32% now of is their average blend rate. 32% of their fuel is ethanol. And so they have incredibly strong demand in Brazil. Their domestic capacity at times has not been able to keep up with that demand. And in response to that, we have been able to export ethanol to Brazil to help them meet that demand. But they put this 18% tariff in place and other technical barriers, kind of sneaky barriers that keep our product out. And it's been a real problem. That was once a 500 million gallon market for U.S. ethanol. And today we're sending virtually no ethanol to Brazil. And meanwhile, our market is wide open to them. In fact, our policy incentivizes or encourages the importation of Brazilian sugarcane ethanol. So that has been a big issue, probably our top issue on the trade front. The Trump administration has decided to take action to level the playing field with Brazil. They very recently, the USTR has proposed a 25% tariff on not just Brazilian ethanol, but virtually every product coming from Brazil into the U.S. market. And, you know, would prefer to have no tariffs, period. But if Brazil is going to insist in keeping these barriers in place, we've got to do something to level the playing field. And so hopefully the action that USTR is taking will get the Brazilian government and Brazilian industry back to the table to negotiate with us in good faith on how we get back to that situation we had 7 or 8 years ago, where both of our markets were wide open to one another, and we allowed trade to do what trade is supposed to do, which is provide the most economical and efficient options for consumers in both markets.
So let's talk about California. What role has that state played in U.S. demand for ethanol? And what policies do they have on the table now that are helping to advance demand? Or perhaps what regulations are still in place that are preventing the growth of this renewable fuel in a state that clearly is concerned about the environment?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jeff. California has been historically one of our largest markets in the U.S. for ethanol. Typically, they're number one or number two in terms of ethanol consumption by state. So it's been a hugely important market for us. They have in place their low carbon fuel standard. And our industry, the ethanol industry, has figured out how to make that program work for us. You know, we are shipping low carbon ethanol to California to help them meet the goals of that LCFS program. But at the same time, they were very late to the party on E15. They were the very last state to finally approve E15 as a legal fuel. They didn't get that done until last year. The governor signed a bill into law late last year that would finally allow E15 to be sold in the state, but it's not happening yet because, to your point, the layers of regulatory bureaucracy in California are thicker than any other state in the country. And we're still dealing with a few of those regulatory barriers before E15 can be sold. And the biggest one is their state fire marshal has said, hey, we have this very unique, what's called stage two vapor recovery equipment at retail sites. And that hasn't been shown to be compatible with E15, even though all of the manufacturers of that equipment say, yes, it's perfectly fine to run E15 through that equipment. The fire marshal has a process and he is sticking to it and wants this equipment tested with E15 before he'll approve the use of E15 in that equipment. So we're working through that as quickly as possible. We think there is a chance there could be some more legislative activity that sort of provides additional direction to the fire marshal. So we could see that in the months ahead. But the bottom line is we got to get those remaining barriers out of the way, open the California market to E15. Retailers in that state are screaming for E15 because obviously they have the highest prices in the country. They're looking for any way they can to help lower prices for consumers who are really struggling when they pull up to the pump.
Jeff, it may sound like a mark from left field, but I'm going to introduce this. Trains, planes, automobiles, and boats. Yep. Looking for new demand and new opportunity for renewable fuel. And I note this past week that a cargo ship left the Santos port in Brazil for China. And they touted that it was largely being powered by a new fuel and it was generated from ethanol. What opportunities Yep. are there in other means of transportation that are growing or could show significant growth for corn-based, plant-based ethanol?
The short answer is there is enormous opportunity in those markets, and it is a little bit of a longer-term play. Obviously, we're focused on E15 to provide that short-term demand boost, but down the road, 5 to 10 years from now, we absolutely need to be seeing larger volumes of ethanol being used in those other segments of transportation, marine fuel, aviation fuel. And so, yeah, we were very excited by the announcement from Maersk that, that ethanol powered ship has made, you know, has essentially traversed the globe, using ethanol with no problems whatsoever. And there's some kind of global international regulatory developments that are ongoing. International policy frameworks that will compel shippers around the globe to reduce the carbon intensity of the fuels they're using. And we think that that creates a real opening for ethanol to get in there. So that's been a huge area of focus for us. We're very involved in the regulatory development process around this kind of global standard for lower carbon maritime fuels and see just a tremendous opportunity. That market worldwide is 80 billion gallons. That's how much fuel the global maritime sector uses, 80 billion gallons. So if ethanol can capture even a sliver of that, it could be a game changer for us.
And that is just a shadow of what could be from the airline industry.
You know, we look at sustainable aviation fuel as, you know, very much like maritime, another tremendously huge market opportunity for us longer term. And there is some, continuing R&D and scaling up of some SAF production assets. That's happening a little slower than we'd like to see. There's still some policy things that need to be ironed out. But the sky is the limit, not to use a really bad pun there, with aviation fuel. In the U.S. market alone, The U.S. aviation sector is using close to 30 billion gallons of fuel a year. And so if we're, you know, again, you get a quarter of that market or even half of that market, you're talking about huge quantities of renewable fuel that would be needed. And obviously that's going to have significant impacts, positive impacts for agriculture in our country.
Contrasting the recent administrations, the Biden administration seemed to have the thumb on the bottom of the scale and lifting for electric vehicles. The Trump administration put some of that away. Where is the auto industry now? And is there in the balance the direction of liquid transportation versus electric as voters will make choices of who leads the nation?
Yeah, I think the automakers, we've heard a very consistent message from them for a very long time, which is we just want consistency in our policy and regulatory frameworks. You know, they've really been whipsawed back and forth. You know, you had the Obama administration come in and put in place very aggressive tailpipe standards, which began to push the automakers toward electric vehicles. Then you had Trump 1 come in and they rolled a lot of that back and said, no, we're going to focus on liquid fuels. Then you had the Biden administration come back in and they said, no, we're going to take what Obama did and put it on steroids and essentially mandate the production and sale of electric vehicles. And now you have Trump back in office. They've gone back the other way. So the automakers, it's a bit like a ping pong game for them. They don't know which way to look. So they're looking for consistency. But the other thing they want is choices and options, because that's what their customers want. And they don't want to be told what type of vehicle they have to build. And they don't want to be told exactly what technology or what fuel that vehicle has to have. So I think we're all trying to get to a long-term framework that provides them the certainty they're looking for. And we believe if we're talking about, you know, needing lower carbon and if, you know, fuel efficiency and all the things that people care about long term, ethanol should certainly have a role in that framework. I do think there's some optimism with the approach that the Trump administration has taken to fuel economy and tailpipe standards. The challenge is going to be making sure that's durable and that, you know, survives the next administration, whoever that may be.
When we talk with Donnell Rehagen, your counterpart with Clean Fuels Alliance America, what he was hoping for was a clear direction from the EPA on RVOs. We have them for this year and for next year, but a clear signal down the line that this is the direction the country's going that would encourage that investment to pour concrete, build plants, and increase production.
That's right, Jeff. We have seen, you know, EPA back in March finalized the 2026 and 27 RFS standards at historically high levels, very robust volume requirements. That's a great thing for the biofuels industry. It's a great thing for agriculture, but it's 2 years worth of standards, right? And the marketplace is responding to those signals already. There is massive investment happening in expanded capacity and, you know, new technologies and efficiencies. But what happens after 2027? And so EPA, we know, is already working on its proposal for that next tranche of RFS standards. We met with EPA this week in Washington, D.C., and our message to them has been the same as Donnell's and the same as everyone else's, which is we got to keep that trajectory moving in the right direction. We need to provide that level of certainty and predictability to these marketplaces so that investment will come. You can't have record high volumes for 26 and 27 and then lower them in 28 and 29 and then increase them again. We've got to have a steady growth trajectory that the marketplace believes is real, and when you have that, that's when the investment flows. And so that's what we're pushing for.
Jeff, I thought I heard you say earlier that Brazil is using a 30% ethanol blend in their fuel. So if that's the case, is E15 the last hill for the renewable industry in the U.S. to fight, or Are there battles ahead for even higher blends?
Yeah, we're absolutely not stopping with E15. It's the next step in the progression. But as you and I have talked about many times, Jeff, the sweet spot for ethanol content in gasoline is in that 20 to 30% range. And Brazil has recognized that for decades. That's where they've been. And unfortunately, you know, our policymakers and regulators here in the U.S. have been slow to get there. We struggle to even get to E15. But yes, if we are going to make the best use of the ethanol we're producing in this country, we need to be focused on those mid-level blends, E20 to E30. And so I can guarantee you that the work has already started on kind of that next hill. We're not just waiting till we get E15 done, to start thinking about the strategy for moving to even higher blends.
Well, Jeff Cooper, you had a very busy week in Washington, D.C. with all the Hill visits and meetings, and yet you were still willing to provide opportunity for us to have a conversation and talk about ethanol and the Renewable Fuels Association. Thank you for your time. Jeff, you get the open mic.
Well, I guess what I would finish with, Jeff, is just, you know, after a very busy week of meetings and lots of discussions with policymakers and regulators, and of course, all of our members and our friends in the Corn Growers Association, we do feel like there is more opportunity for this industry than there's ever been. It feels like we're really on the cusp of something big, whether that's, you know, getting E15 done, breaking into the maritime fuel market, further advancing sustainable aviation fuels, you know, trade. We look at the fact that we're going to have record exports again this year. It really does feel like we're kind of entering a second renaissance period for the ethanol industry. If we can just get some of these policy and regulatory issues buttoned up and get out of the way and let the marketplace respond, we have no doubt that our corn grower friends are going to respond, and certainly our industry is going to respond in a way that continues to grow the industry, continues to create jobs, continues to generate economic activity in rural communities, continues to strengthen our domestic energy security, and most importantly, lower energy prices for American consumers.
Our thanks to this week's guest, Jeff Cooper, President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by AgriPulse. Celebrate America's 250th year with AgriPulse and save $250 on your first subscription. Don't miss the news that matters most. Subscribe to AgriPulse today. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Daly.